All right. Well, it's great to be here, and I appreciate it. I think it was 2009 was the last time I had the opportunity to be in front of this group, and appreciate Doug and the rest of the NAAB group for inviting me to share some of my insights. I'm not going to talk a lot about genetics tonight, but I'm going to share some of the things that we've been working on over the last few years in terms of the impacts of estrous synchronization and artificial insemination on the economic side of things for the average cow-calf producer. And as many of you know, or might hear me anyway, is I actually didn't grow up in this country. I actually grew up in Africa. I tell people that because I do speak a little bit funny. And so I always show a couple of slides from Africa before I get started. And so here you are. You know, I grew up in Africa where there's a lot of crime. And so here you can see we've got some issues. But I don't think it's because of our crime in Africa that is a problem. I think it's because of our police force. You'll notice these guys wearing glasses upside down. Here you go. And this is my favorite slide of the police force. So, anyway, so I'm not going to talk a lot about estrous synchronization. I think we hear a lot about estrous synchronization, and people just have this blank stare over their face about all of these protocols and things like that. We know how to synchronize cows. Not a lot of changes have occurred over the last 5 to 10 years in terms of estrous synchronization. Maybe a few things here and there, but for the most part, estrous synchronization hasn't really changed that much. Most of the impact of synchronization, or most of the increases in synchronization or productivity or yield and pregnancy rates that we get tends not to be in the tweaking or the changing of synchronization systems or the systems you choose, but more in terms of management or a lot of other factors that may be more in the producer's hands than it is in the hands of the person actually synchronizing the cows or artificially inseminating the cows. But first of all, when it comes to artificial insemination, my recommendation 99% of the time whenever we synchronize cows is to focus on the recommended protocols that the Beef Reproduction Task Force puts together. And we have a few of those members right here in the crowd tonight. And essentially, we update these every year. And so when folks want to talk about synchronization and what type of systems to use, ultimately it comes down to potentially using one of these systems out there. That's what we recommend. And because these are tested both from a research standpoint, but they're also field tested. They're tested in producers' hands. And so most of the time what we do, and in actual fact when you hear about synchronization systems, which ones are most used, nowadays, most people are utilizing some form of fixed-timed AI system. And so I know even though this is a reduced recommendation list for cows on one hand and heifers on the other hand, but down at the bottom are the fixed-timed AI systems. And for the most part, most people are utilizing fixed-timed AI systems for first-service synchronization. And so my recommendation to more people than not is if you want to synchronize your cows, focus on the fixed-timed AI, eliminate heat detection to some extent, and the experience becomes a lot easier than the old methods of heat detection. So that's sort of my recommendation. I'm not going to get into the individual synchronization systems. If you want to look at these systems, they're in the back of sire directories from any of the major semen companies. You're welcome to take a look at them. And if you have questions, contact somebody from one of the major semen companies or a university extension specialist who has experience with reproduction. And for the most part, they will recommend these protocols. But I was asked to talk a little bit about the economics and economics of synchronization and AI in a cattle operation. And so I'm going to share with you a study that we initiated eight years ago. And this sort of falls back on, I was at the University of Minnesota for about 10 years, and about 8 years ago, I moved to the University of Florida to run the North Florida Research and Education Center. And in this herd, we have about a third of the cows are Brangus-related, about a quarter of the cows are Brayfords, so a lot of ear in those cattle. And then about somewhere in the range of about a half of the cows are Angus or Sim Angus, so Bos Taurus related animals. And the thing that struck me when I got to be in that operation is how easy it was for people to accept that you could not incorporate artificial insemination into a system in the southern part of the U.S. And so I said, we're going to start off with some rules. We're going to create some rules for these cows. They're going to have to meet some rules for them to stay in the herd. But I think a lot of people don't want to do that because of the hassle factors associated with actually incorporating some rules for the cows to remain pregnant and stay in the herd. And so we started in the spring of 2008 following this herd and incorporating specific rules. And this sort of comes about in the fact that we know that pregnancy has about a 4 times greater economic impact than any other production trait in an operation. And that number could be 2 times, it could be 6 times. But on the average, when you look at what people talk about, on the average, reproduction accounts for, or pregnancy has a 4 times greater economic impact. So, you know, we select for a lot of these traits. I mean, we're talking about heifer pregnancy, we're talking about carcass traits, we're talking about a lot of traits that you guys will be talking about for the next 2 or 3 days. Excuse me. But ultimately, when it comes to beef cattle operation, isn't pregnancy the most important trait that we should be worrying about? Because if a cow does not become pregnant, she cannot calve, and she won't be able to generate any income for the operation. So ultimately, pregnancy is the most important thing. And so what I wanted to do in this operation is get this operation to get more cows pregnant earlier in the breeding season and try and figure out if in fact, we could increase the economic impact of that operation. So these are the rules that we set aside in the spring. It was in January of 2008. And what we said is that every cow, regardless of whether she's a Brahman cross or non-Brahman cross cow, is going to calve by the time she's 24 months of age. Every cow must have a calf every 365 days. Every cow must calve without assistance. And the cow must provide sufficient resources for the calf to reach its genetic potential. Essentially, the cow must produce enough milk for the calf to grow. And then each calf that cow produces must be genetically capable of performing. And then the cows must maintain body condition score for the conditions in our operation. In other words, okay, we didn't want to have to supplement certain cows in the herd because they got too thin. And then every cow that is crazy was eliminated from the operation. So if they're crazy for whatever reason, they had disposition problems, we eliminated them from the herd. We started these rules on these cows in 2008. That's our expectation of every cow in the herd. And we haven't wavered from that in the 8 years I've been there, or 7 breeding seasons. But that we created these rules for every cow in that operation. The other thing that's really important is what we decided to do is that we wanted every heifer, we only kept heifers that became pregnant in the first 25 days of the breeding season. So if a heifer became pregnant 26 days into the breeding season, we did not keep her in the herd. She was eliminated from the herd. Remember, our single most important trait in this operation is pregnancy. And so we focused on pregnancy. And we allowed the other traits to take care of themselves. So there's a lot of data that shows very, very similar effects. But here, this is some data out of USDA Mark. Heifers that become pregnant in the first 21 days, heifers that become pregnant in the second 21 days, or the third 21 days and after, their longevity in the herd. And those animals that become pregnant in the first 21 days of the breeding season, you'll notice their longevity in the herd. This is into 9 breeding calving seasons. Those heifers that become pregnant in the first 21 days remain in the herd longer than those animals that become pregnant later in the breeding season. And so for us, we wanted those animals to remain in the herd longer. We wanted them to be more productive for us for a longer period of time. And so that is why we came up with the 25-day breeding season. So what we do is we artificially inseminate the heifers on the first day of the breeding season. We allow them, we either resynchronize the heifers or we allow the bulls to go in and clean up after the artificial insemination, And we will preg check 28 days after the 25th day of the breeding season. And any animal that is pregnant is eligible to stay in the herd. If she is not pregnant at that point, she's eliminated from the herd. Okay? It doesn't mean to say that the best animals in the herd might become very good animals in somebody else's operation, and that's okay. But for our operation, we want them pregnant early. Okay? At the same time, when you look at the calving information in this USDA mark data, you'll notice that those heifers that become pregnant in the first 21 days produce heavier weaning weights all the way up to the seventh calf. So you'll notice that they're pregnant all the way up to the seventh calf compared to those animals that become pregnant outside of the first 21 days. And so from a productivity standpoint, that is one of our big reasons for creating this rule that we'll only keep heifers in the first 25 days of the breeding season. Okay, the other thing is that I had to overcome when I first moved to the North Florida Research and Education Center was this mentality that it's too difficult to artificially inseminate cows. Okay, and what are the reasons that folks decide not to artificially inseminate cows? It comes down to about four things. And I'll go through each of those four things that I think are probably the primary reasons why folks decide not to artificially inseminate cows. It is a hassle. They're hassle factors. Okay, and this is these are the reasons. But a lot of people will think of a lot of other reasons. They might say, oh, their bulls are better. Calving ease is not an issue. Things like that. But ultimately, the reason that they don't want to do any artificial insemination or synchronization, obviously, are the protocols. They're complicated protocols, or selecting sires is just too much of a hassle, trying to read through EPDs, things like that, things that a lot of you guys are here to understand a little bit more about right now. The other thing is having reliable facilities, making sure that you can actually run the animals in to synchronize them and artificially inseminate them. These two things, I think, have been overcome largely by having recommended protocols and having portable facilities that you can use turnkey systems in, come into the operation and synchronize animals. The other thing is having labor for artificial insemination and administration. Again, I think a lot of this is overcome. Nobody now can say, I don't know how to use artificial insemination. I don't know how to artificially inseminate my cows, because we've developed timed AI systems where you can get an expert to come and do it, where you don't have to know how to do it yourself. And then time. And this is a very critical thing. A lot of people might be farming. They might be doing a lot of other things, and they just don't want to make the time to use artificial insemination. It's just too much of a hassle. Those essentially are the four reasons why people don't artificially inseminate, because the economics, as I'll show you in a few minutes, doesn't seem to play out. That AI should work in most cattle operations right now. And a big reason for that is the cost of semen and the cost of synchronization products has not increased at the same rate as the cost of bulls. You take a look at the cost of bulls over the last 4 or 5 years, how that has increased. They've certainly not increased at the same rate as those other things I talked about. So I had to overcome those things with the staff at the University of Florida at the experiment station. It was quite simple for them. All they had to do was turn bulls in on the first day of the breeding season and maybe pull the bulls out sometime at the end of the breeding season, and that just depended on how busy they were. Okay, so we had to go in here, and here, this is the breeding season of 2006 and the breeding season of 2007. They had about 120-day breeding season. And I say about 120-day breeding season because when I go back to the records, this is before I got there, I'm not exactly sure if they actually pulled the bulls out on those days, but they say they did. Okay? So what I did in 2008, I said, now we're going to artificially and give every cow a chance to become pregnant to artificial insemination. So the very first year, we AI'd the heifers. A week later, we AI'd the cows. And then we had a group of cows. Because of the long breeding season the year before, we had a group of cows that hadn't calved early enough. So we had a second group of cows we had to AI. And then we called them the late calving cows. We had to AI 70 days into the breeding season, and we removed the bulls about 10 days early. So that's the first day. Can you imagine what the staff said to me about artificial insemination? We had to synchronize these cattle. We had to run cattle through the chute 12 different times just to get everything synchronized. plus pull the balls of about 110 days. You can imagine the mentality we had to overcome that year. The next year we did exactly the same thing. Okay, we had AI'd the heifers, AI'd the cows, and then two other groups of cows we had to artificially inseminate, but we shortened the breeding season again down to about 88 days. The third year, now you'll start to notice, we AI'd the heifers and the cows again, but only one group of cows we artificially inseminated, and then we removed the bulls early. So now we've started to move those cows back so that most of the cows are starting to calve at the beginning of the calving season. And then we're also, remember, we're only selecting heifers that are going to calve in the first 25 days of the calving season. 2011 was the same way, except we reduced the calving season down to 75 days. And then look at 2012 and 2013 breeding seasons, what we've managed to do. So in 5 years, we've essentially gone down from 120-day breeding season down to 70-day breeding season in our operation, and all of the cows are eligible to be artificially inseminated on the first day of the breeding season. That's quite significant. So you can imagine what has happened. Okay, so I've had to overcome not only the physiological and the production aspects of the operation, but you can imagine how much easier it is on our staff right now. They know now that they only have to run cattle through a chute about 6 times, and everything is artificially inseminated on the first day of the breeding season. And then we essentially remove the bulls now at 72 days. And if you take a look at this, it's actually about a 64-day breeding season for the cows, because the cows are AI'd on the 8th day of the breeding season, and we pull the bulls on the day 72 of the breeding season. So when you look at this, you take a look at the calf distribution over the different years. And so to set this up, what this is, along the bottom here, these are the days from the first day of the calving season in each calving year to 140 days into the calving season. And this is the percentage of cumulative percentage of cows that are calved within each year. So each color graph is a different year. And so as each calf is born, you just keep on adding it up here until 100% of the calves are born for that year. And you take a look here at the olive and the red bars. Those are the 2 years before we got there, before we started synchronizing cows, before we started putting pressure on this herd for pregnancy. And look how spread out this calving season is, okay? 140 days into the calving season before 100% of the calves are born. And we didn't plan this, but you take a look here. Every year after that, we gradually moved to the left. So every year, we gradually shifted the average calving date to the left. What we've done is we've put pressure on the herd by synchronizing. We're using reproductive technologies in terms of synchronizing. We're selecting heifers that are pregnant early. And the other thing that we've done is we've shortened the breeding season. Those are three reproductive technologies that are extremely important. And look what has happened to our calving season. And I'm going to make a statement that I'm not so sure that pregnancy rates to artificial insemination is all that important. My goal is, what percentage of cows become pregnant in the first 30 days of the breeding season? That is probably the most important economic indicator we have in our operation. And I will tell you that our pregnancy rates to artificial insemination have ranged from 33% to 59%. And if I asked anybody in here, most of you would say this yellow line is the 33%, this blue line is 59%. And that is not true, okay? This orange line is the 33%. But every year, just because we're committed to our synchronization and to our breeding season and to our selection process, we've gradually shifted our calving season towards the left. Just by being committed to the rules that we set aside for pregnancy, we want more cows pregnant earlier in the breeding season. Okay, and so that's what's happened there. But this is also what has happened. You take a look here. This is the overall season-ending breeding season pregnancy rates. These are the first 2 years before we implemented any pressure on the herd for pregnancy. Our cows were about 81 to 86% pregnant overall at the end of the breeding season. Take a look where we're at now. 92 to 94% pregnancy rates in the last 3 years. That's the overall breeding season pregnancy rates. We have 120. We have a 50-day shorter breeding season, and we've increased pregnancy rates 10% in the herd. Okay. In addition to that, this is the average calf value, the increase in calf value based on weaning weights that we have increased in today's dollars. So right here, the first year we implemented our synchronization in AI, the first year each calf was worth $87 more than the year before based on weaning weights. Now, each calf is worth $169 more per calf in today's value than what they were 5 years ago. Each calf is worth that much more. And to our operation of about 300 calves, we're bringing in about $50,000 more. All of these are based on today's calf value, so we're not changing calf value from year to year. It's all based on the same calf value. We're increased our calf value just to that operation of about $50,000. And I tell folks a lot about this, is I don't spend that money frivolously. I actually allow our staff to decide how to utilize that money. And so do you think now that it's a hassle to run cows through the chute to artificially inseminate them? Okay, I say to them every year, I say, now we've got $50,000. Tell me how you want to spend this money to improve the beef cattle operation here. How do they spend it? They spend it on equipment. They spend it on things that are going to help them out. So now, is there any complaining when I say we're going to run the cattle through the chute to artificially inseminate? There's very little of that goes on. But this is real world. I mean, this is a cattle operation that we run just like any beef cattle operation, and we're generating $50,000 more to that operation just by putting some pressure on that herd for pregnancy, just by creating some rules that we expect every cow in that herd to become pregnant when we want them to become pregnant. I don't think we're selecting for fertility. I don't think we're selecting for pregnancy. All we're expecting is those cows to become pregnant in our environment and in our management system. And those cows that we call from the herd might be very good cows in somebody else's management system somewhere else, but they just don't seem to work in our operation. This is something else. We did a big study in South Dakota two summers ago, and we had 8 different operations, about 1,700 cows. And what we did is we synchronized all of these cattle. It was an FDA study, and we artificially inseminated them all to exactly the same system. We had some other treatments in there, but these are the cows that were inseminated to the 7-day coasting seeder system. And you take a look at these operations. There's 3 herds that you get very good pregnancy rates. And then you get 5 herds here that we had what most people would say, gee whiz, those are really disappointing pregnancy rates. And so what we did is we went through and we looked at these herds and we decided to say, well, what is it about these 3 herds that was consistent among these 3 herds versus those other 5 herds that was not that may have been different from those 3 herds? And so you can look at body condition score, you can look at AI technician, you can look at semen, you can look at days postpartum, you can look at all of those things. None of that stuff was consistent except for one thing. These 3 herds had all artificially inseminated for 8 years or more consistently, regardless of the pregnancy rates they got the year before. Okay, they continued to stay committed to synchronization year after year after year. These other herds here may have artificially inseminated, and if they had a bad year, they quit, and then they might have come back to it. So committing to some type of synchronization year after year after year was the only thing that was consistent among those 3 herds that was not consistent among the other 5 herds. So synchronization year after year and committing to a process obviously seems to help. So this is that very first herd. And when you look at the days postpartum in this herd, this is 400 cows represented here. And this is the days postpartum in these 400 cows. Look how tight the calving season is in these cows. You can imagine that they'll respond far better than this is herd number 5. Okay, this is the days postpartum in this herd, a bull bred herd. Look how spread out the days postpartum are. So the expectations need to be different from every cattle operation depending on how they're treated from year to year to year. And I think very often we have very unrealistic expectations of what to get from our synchronization system. If you've synchronized year after year after year, you can say, yeah, I can expect a 60% pregnancy rate, or I can expect 65%, and I will do it. But if it's your first time, expecting a 60% pregnancy rate might be unrealistic. So having realistic expectations is extremely important. This is something that I did in those 8 operations. I took, these are the herds that had not artificially inseminated, and I took their, basically the calving distribution if they were not artificially inseminated in the past. And this is essentially what I did. This is the calving date along the bottom here. And this is this arrow represents, it's day 11, represents the first expected day of calving. And you take a look at, this is very typical of what would happen, a sort of a bell-shaped curve, cows start calving, and then they peak, and then they sort of die off. Well, in the first 30 days of the calving season with these bull bred herds, about 44% of the calves are born from the very first calf that is born until 30 days into the calving season. About 44% of the calves are born in these operations. They were all very well-managed operations, all had less than 75-day calving seasons. And when I averaged the days postpartum by the start of the next breeding season, on the average, those cows were 64 days postpartum when they start the next breeding season. Okay? And then when you look at, this is the percentage of cows, about 43% of the cows were less than 50 days postpartum at the start of the next breeding season. And that's the bull bred herds. Take a look at the timed AI herds. Again, the average expected calving date was day 11 of the calving season. Look how front-loaded the calving season is here. Just by exposing those cows to synchronization and artificial insemination, we front-load the calving season. In the first 30 days in these operations, 88% of the cows had given birth. And now look, 79 days postpartum by the start of the next breeding season, we're increasing the days postpartum, that period of time where they can recover and start their estrous cycles before the next breeding season, is increased by 15 days. But here, this is the most important thing to me. Only about 7% of those cows were less than 50 days postpartum at the start of the next breeding season. So a higher percentage of those cows have a chance to start cycling and become pregnant in the next breeding season. And so anything that we can do to front-load the calving season is going to increase our fertility to the next calving season or next breeding season. So let me change gears here and talk very quickly about economics, and then I'll be done and be able to turn it back over to Doug. And this was some data that we published we did the experiment about 7 years ago. And essentially what we wanted to do is we wanted to look at the economic impact of implementing a synchronization and AI system into herds that had not used artificial insemination before. But the key is, in this experiment, is we did not want to look at the genetic impact. We just wanted to look at the synchronization and ultimate pregnancy impacts on the system. So we went into these herds, 8 herds that had never used AI before, and half of the cows we just exposed to natural mating, just like the producers had done year after year after year. Half of the cows we exposed to the 7-day coasting seeder system, and we time AI'd them. And the semen we used was similar in EPDs to the natural service sires. And then we turned in cleanup bulls, and so they had the same length breeding season, just as the producers had done in the past. So one treatment without synchronization, the other treatment with synchronization, but very similar genetics. When you look over here at the number of cows, about 600 cows per treatment. But here is the weaning rate per treatment. Those cows in the control treatment without synchronization weaned about 78% of the calves. Those cows in the timed AI treatment weaned about 84% of the calves. This is not the percentage of cows that calved that weaned a calf. This is the percentage of cows that were treated, that went through the rest of the breeding season, then went ahead and calved, and then weaned a calf 18 months later. So these numbers are fairly close to industry average. But about 6% more cows wean a calf just by exposing a cow now to synchronization. 18 months from now, about 6 cows out of every 100 more will be weaned if you expose them to estrous synchronization and timed AI, rather than if you choose not to synchronize those cows. And here down at the bottom, you'll see the weaning weight in pounds per cow treated. Okay, about an increase in about 38 pounds of calf weaned per cow treated. That's quite significant. And so that's an extra 38 pounds. Just by treating a cow with synchronization, we're increasing about, by the time we wean a calf, 18 months later, she's producing us an extra 38 pounds per cow. So we did a partial budget based on each of the inputs in each of these operations. And you'll notice on those eight operations, one operation had about a $6 loss. But look here, in seven of the eight operations, about a $19 to $139 profit for an average of about $49 per cow treated just by exposing those cows to synchronization and artificial insemination. Okay, nothing else is different, and we include all of the costs of the synchronization products, labor, facilities, bull-to-cow ratio differences, things like that. Those are all included. And just by exposing cows to synchronization and artificial insemination, we generate about $59 per cow. That was, like I said, about 7 or 8 years ago, and so the numbers are a little bit different. So what I did is I used this model, and I generated some numbers here for basically the same thing. So I said, okay, a producer needs to sit here, and he's got to decide this coming spring or next fall or next spring, do I go and buy a $3,000 bull or $3,000 bulls for my herd, or do I use artificial insemination? A $6,000 bull or $6,000 bulls or a $10,000 bull. And the choice is either synchronization or purchasing those bulls. Well, if you purchase those bulls for these prices, down here you'll see if you purchase, let's just choose a $6,000 bull, you're giving up about $114 per cow by not synchronizing her rather than purchasing that bull for $6,000. But let's say on that $6,000 bull, You choose, okay, I'm not going to spend $6,000 on a bull. I'm just going to artificially inseminate to your operation. If you have 100 cows in your operation, that's a advantage of about $9,000 for that operation. That's significant. You can generate an extra $9,000 just by choosing to artificially inseminate your cows rather than going out there and purchasing a bunch of bulls for $6,000. And what a lot of people get really hung up on is when it comes to the decision to use artificial insemination, they will haggle over a $10 versus an $11 seeder. They will haggle over the arm service for $5 to $7. Or they will complain about, oh boy, the semen is $16 this year and last year it was $14. They will worry about those things. But when you really worry about, when you input this into an economic model, those things play such a small role in the cost of pregnancy. The two things that play the biggest role in the cost of pregnancy are the cost of bulls and the bull-to-cow ratio. Those things are so much more significant, yet we spend so much more time worrying about the cost of the seeder, the cost of semen, or the cost of arm service. We forget. Most people will bring back their $15,000 bull and say, look at my $15,000 bull, and I'll go, oh, you could do so much better just by artificially inseminating your cows, okay? Because of what might come back into your operation. So they're proud of spending $15,000, but they don't realize the cost that that's bringing back per pregnancy. And so when you enter that into this model, you start to realize that type of information. And so we generated this app called the AI Calculator. If you have a smartphone, you can download it. It's free. And whether it's a Google-based product or an Android-based or iPhone-based product, you can download it and it's free. And basically, you just enter your bull-related costs. What you expect to, if you're going to go and purchase bulls, you enter that information, your costs for maintaining bulls, things like that. You also have to enter the things such as your AI-related costs, synchronization products, and then the size of your herd, the number of bulls that you would use if you were just going to naturally service or if you want to use artificial insemination. You enter all of that information in here. There are not that many things to enter. And then if the number comes up as green, it means you should consider artificial insemination. But if the number comes up as red, you should consider utilizing a bull. And so that's what the AI calculator does. So that allows folks that are out in the field or if you're consulting with anybody out there, use the AI calculator to allow them to help them make a decision on whether to use artificial insemination or natural service. I'll be quite honest. I mean, when we first developed the AI calculator, we could find a lot of scenarios where it wasn't worthwhile using artificial insemination. But now, at the rate that the bull costs have increased, semen costs have not increased, and drug costs have not increased at the same rate, it's very difficult to find a scenario that it doesn't work. There's also an Excel-based version. It's tough to get there. If you really want to get a copy of that, just send me an email. But it's exactly the same things. If you don't have a smartphone, just get the Excel-based version. You can send me an email, and I'll send it to you. So with that, I will end right there. My contact information is right there if you need to get hold of me for anything. And Doug, I'll turn it right back over to you.